coming down the home stretch here, Tom, as the deadline to get your tickets is what, the 20th of November?
Yeah, November the 20th, we have to cut off so we can give away all these prizes, 1,313 more prizes worth in excess of $2 million. We're going to give all those away on the 22nd after we get everything balanced up, and we're going to do it live on CKRM so everybody will know that they when they win the major prize. And Michael, you know some of the great prizes we're going to be giving away that day is a first prize of $250,000 cash, a second prize of $150,000 cash, and a third touchdown cash prize of $50,000. Then we followed that up with 13 brand new Ford and GMC vehicles. We've got recreation machines like a recreation trailer, all-terrain vehicle, a Bayliner sports boat, 44 trips all over the world, all kinds of electronic prizes and equipment prizes. Then we end up with a little novel gifts like 200 exclusive green and white Ryder fridges all decorated up as Ryder colors. So we got something for everybody, but time's running out. You know, we've only got a few days left to buy your tickets because we're cutting off, as I said, on November the 20th, so we can give away all those prizes on the 22nd.
And, of course, once you get the ticket, you can get the 50-50 add-on, which tracks at around $350,000. And also you got that daily cash calendar too, Tom.
Yeah, that daily cash calendar is something new, and it's been a big hit. We're going to give away cash every day in the month of December to 31 different winners, including $15,000 on Christmas Day, $2,000 on every Monday in December, and $1,000 on every other day. So we got something for everyone. So if you're coming down to the game or next week, you come into the Ryder Ticket Office and buy your ticket. Or a much easier way to do it is to call 1-800-668-1999 or go online, friendsoftheriders.com.
All right, that's Tom Shepard, Friends of the Riders Touchdown Lottery, the 32nd edition. Thanks for this, Tom.
Thank you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Rider Nation, and thanks for making us part of your semifinal Sunday. I'm Michael Ball, along with former Rider greats Chris Best and Paul Waldo. And today the Riders host the Bombers as their road to the Grey Cup begins on the frozen field at Mosaic Stadium. The Riders are a team built on defense and special teams, and, well, that's a good thing because the Riders' quarterbacking situation is in doubt today for the game. Zach Collaros is listed as the starter on the depth chart, but he may not play today. In fact, he might not even dress, according to some. If that's the case, it'll be up to Brandon Bridge to hopefully find enough of his 2017 form to lead the Riders to a playoff victory today against Matt Nichols and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Coming up on Rough Rider Game Day Playoff Edition, we'll hear from the newest Rough Riders, Drew Tate and Corey Poop Johnson. Yeah, we'll talk about how he got that nickname. Also, Darian Durant, Luke Mulliter, and Nick Lewis will drop by. We'll talk in our Growing the Gang segment about a huge victory by the U of S Huskies with their assistant coach, Paul Waldo. But we're going to open things up by getting some thoughts from Chris Best and Paul Waldo. This is Rough Rider Game Day across the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And it's semifinal Sunday in the Canadian Football League. Michael Ball along with Chris Best and Paul Waldo. The early game as the BC Lions and the Hamilton Tiger Cats tangling at the Donut Shop, Tim Hortons Field. We'll track that game as we go along in this broadcast. Wherever you're listening, thanks for making us part of your day, as we said. And we want to remember our veterans and those that gave their lives so we could enjoy this snowy semifinal Sunday at Mosaic Stadium. We're coming from Harvard Studio 620. The show is brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bob. Cat. Now, a lot going on in Rider Nation, of course, and we're going to get down to it. But one of the new faces joining the Rough Riders this week was Drew Tate, and he is the spotlight in our Rider Rewind. So what do the riders have to do to get you off the couch and into the snowbank?
Well, I wasn't on the couch. I've been coaching since May. Yeah. But Murph gave me a call, and everything just lined up right, and it worked out.
What did Coach Jones tell you that they want you to do? What's your role coming in here?
Just prepare and be ready. If I need to step on the field and do my thing, then I'll do my thing.
Did you have some fire to continue your playing career, or what led to this?
There's a couple of things that lined up, but everything just kind of lined up well, and so we're here, and we're going to do what we got
to
do.
It's kind of neat to come full circle, started here, and you're
yeah, back. Yeah, that was cool. That was like a cool thing, and come here and experience this facility is just, it's really unbelievable.
This isn't as nice as the old stadium, is it?
It's just a tad, just a tad.
Drew, you said you wanted to focus on coaching, right? That's why you retired.
Yeah.
How much of that focus is currently still happening, and how are you balancing that with playing?
Well, now that I'm not in the office all day, I have time, so I do like 75% of SAS stuff, and then 25% I do of about my coastal stuff, and everything I do is online. I have like all my stuff online, so I do my film studies, send them my reports and all that. The only thing I'm missing really back home is the scout team and game day kind of operation stuff, but my DC and head coach gave me their blessing, and they said this was an honor, so I said, okay, well, thank you very much, and hopped on a plane.
What was the biggest...
as a coach to kind of go...
Say what?
What was it like to be a coach after playing for...
Absolutely loved it, and I'm on the defensive side, and man, just couldn't be happier. I've been playing football since I was 7. I'm 34, never played defense, and actually my first year I played, I was a middle linebacker, and then after that, I moved quarterback, and... I wouldn't change it.
What did you learn about the game maybe as a coach?
From the defensive side, it's pretty cool because they spend so much time on formations, looks, and then, as an offensive guy, hell, you could just give them one look and they'll spend 2 hours on it, and it just, it's like smoke and mirrors kind of thing. But also kind of like how defense, how they fit certain gaps on running game and then how they try to attack protection stuff. So, man, it's really cool. I'm gonna end up being a head coach someday, and so definitely gonna be on the offensive side. I don't like to defend because you're always playing second fiddle because they gotta wait till the offense lines up, and that's not me. We're rolling, we're going.
So are you approaching this as a short-term thing? Are you approaching this as a short-term thing?
What?
This stint with the Rough Riders.
I'm just looking at it as a playoff run in 2018 and winning a Grey Cup.
Was that the biggest motivation? The fact that you're coming into a team that's locked up a spot in the playoffs?
If they weren't, then I probably wouldn't be here, right? So, but no, it's, and I've known John Murphy a long time, and I've known Coach Jones for a while. And then actually Rob Bagg was here when I was here my first time. So it's pretty cool to see him. And like I said, it's actually a great locker room. It's fun. I like what they do here. It's really exciting. I've never been anywhere in the CFL like this, and just happy to be here.
Would you have come out of retirement for any of the other teams in the playoffs?
I don't know. You might ask me that in a couple weeks.
Coach Jones has said that there's a chance for you to even play on Sunday. Do you feel as though you're comfortable enough to be able to get some reps?
Yeah, I think so. This offense is very similar to Ottawa's last year, and pretty much half this league runs this offense. So, I think I could squirt out a couple throws.
I read your retirement letter this morning, and it was pretty sure that you were staying and leaving football.
Well, I got it. Yeah. Murph actually called me in July when Zach first went down. And I said, hell no, I'm not coming up. I'm done. And but he called me last week, and like I said, just everything just kind of lined up the way it was supposed to. And hopped on the plane.
Are you okay being, Coach said that you're going to be third on the depth chart behind Brandon and Zach. Are
yeah.
you okay with that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I just got here. So these guys have been here all year. So, you know, I think I have a little insight on this offense because I ran it pretty well last year with the few plays I had. But, you know, I ran it every day in practice. And so I think I can help a little bit, give some insight, and also just kind of, you know, looking at safeties, rotation, and just kind of like looking at body language of the Sam and the weak half. You know, there's a lot of stuff you can throw out there.
Is it part of the motivation here to even pick up some other coaching tips? Like,
absolutely.
Sounds like
you know, it's a never-ending story when it comes to coaching, and you can never not learn, and it just keeps going and going and going.
Besides age, how much does this Drew Tate differ from the guy that was here some years ago?
Oh man, night and day difference.
You had pretty high ambitions when you were here last time. How do you feel your CFL career is going?
Man, I'd say, you know, other than the injuries, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if I don't get hurt, you know, I think I'd have my place in history in this league, no doubt. I think, I think my numbers really kind of speak for themselves. But it's just the opportunity. I just, you know, get dinged all the time. And, you know, I'm not a big guy. And it's just the way she goes, I guess.
That seems the way it was with you when you got an opportunity.
Yeah, right.
Break yourself.
Yeah, right. You know, I'd always come out hot, you know, and we'd do some good things, and then boom, I'd get hit, and then that was it. You know, I was really blessed, though, that, like, Calgary kept me on as long as they did because, I mean, they could have just kicked me to the curb like, you know, like Ottawa did, basically. So, you know, but it's cool. Like, I'm back here, and we're getting to do this and have some fun.
So, like Zach said, you're on the same flight here. Did you get a chance to talk together?
Yeah, we sat in he was window, and I was aisle on row 4. So, yeah, we got to talk and do stuff. I had never met Zach before, but, like, I played with Trevor last year, was with him in Toronto, and said good things about him, and, yeah, he's a good guy.
And that's Drew Tate, quarterback for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We're back live here, Harvard Studio 620. Michael Ball along with Chris Best and Paul Waldo. So let's start there. He used to be your teammate, a buddy of yours, Chris Best.
Actually roommates my second year. You know, Tate's a good friend of mine. We met each other in the Shrine game before we actually both joined the Rough Riders. And so I've known him for a long time. And, yeah, I'm happy to see him back here and able to contribute to the team. And hopefully doesn't get out there because that many things are going poorly for us. But, you know, I'm sure he's bringing a lot to the table here.
What's the likelihood that we see Drew Tate today?
I said I'm really hoping zero. I'm hoping Brandon Bridge kind of gets out there and shows us something we saw last year, something, you know, a decent game, just control the clock, don't turn the ball over, and just, you know, let the running game do its job today. That's what I hope to see, and so I hope that Tate's on the sidelines the whole time.
Nothing has been confirmed yet from the football team. I want to point that out. It was reported by Dave Naylor that Zach Kolaris will not dress.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to leave it at that, and we'll see what happens. But let's go on the presumption, Paul Waldo, that Brandon Bridge is going to play in this football game, and he is going to be the starting quarterback. What does he have to do in order to make this a successful game for the Rough Riders to get to that next game next week?
You know, Chris, I think you just alluded to it. It's not what he has to do. It's what I think he doesn't have to do. And I just don't think he can afford to turn the ball over. Keep it off the ground. Don't put it in the defender's hands. Control line of scrimmage. Obviously, he needs to tighten, I think, the playbook down to his needs. And the defense and special teams, they've done it all year. They've been able to come out and make plays and be opportunistic and score. And, yeah, I think he's more so just going to have to manage the game, relax, not try to do a whole lot, not try to do too much, and let the other phases kind of take action.
Paul mentioned it, Chris Best, that they're going to have to tighten the playbook. I think we've seen that all year with Brandon Bridgender. They have tightened the playbook. Will they even let him do too much today? That's a question to be asked.
Well, I mean, this is a one-off game. Like, we're playing to win this game, so I'd like to give him a couple shots downfield. The man's got a big arm. He can really let it go. So if we kind of let lull the defense to sleep, Winnipeg's defense, and go over the top of them once or twice, that could win the game for us. You know, like a playoff game like this is going to be really hotly contested. So I hope they don't clamp it down too much, but I know what Paul's trying to say. You know, you don't want them thinking too much. You want them just kind of playing within the flow of the game.
Winnipeg likes to run some cover too. You can't do that with Brandon Bridge because Brandon, that's susceptible to opening up running lanes. They're going to have to maybe change their philosophy, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, people can say what they want about, you know, Brandon's, you know, lack of accuracy, but yeah, the one thing he is incredibly athletic, and he can kill you. And those quarterbacks are sometimes tougher to play because you have to game plan them from a different angle, from a different perspective. You're going to have to spy him. You're really going to have to hone him down and try to keep him in the pocket because he's a serious threat when he's moving. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think he hasn't been – I'll get a comment from each of you guys. I'll start with you, Paul, since you just finished your thought. Why do you think he hasn't been that productive this year?
I think the loss of I think the loss of Kevin Glenn really has hurt him this year. Mm-hmm. Kevin was just that steady hand for him that always just kind of put things in perspective for him, because Kevin Glenn's literally seen everything. So he was able to talk with Kevin a bunch and kind of focus on things he needed to focus on and not worry about the other stuff. This year, I know we've heard before, he's kind of getting advice from multiple angles, which is not necessarily right. The best, you know. When the advice conflicts, like who are you supposed to listen to? So I think that hurts, you know, just kind of lack of that steady hand helping him out.
How about you, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to touch on what you're saying, Chris, I think it's exactly it. And I think all that will deal with confidence, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're confident and you trust in what you're doing, then you can kind of go out there and block all the noise out. But, you know, anytime you lack confidence, and he's done it before. You know, he went in and won games. He won several games last year. So he does have the ability to do it. But I think, you know, when you end up, you know, making a big signing in the offseason, and he was probably expecting to be the number one quarterback, and then he comes in and the pressure's on that, you know, he can't get it done. And I just think that, you know, at the end of the day, he's got to believe in what he's doing, and he's just kind of got to relax and just do what he does and not try to do too much.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see. And here's another aspect. And Nick Lewis, we're going to talk to him a little later on the show. Nick Lewis has been working with Brandon Bridge this week. Brandon's really relied upon and is leaning on Nick Lewis, who obviously knows a thing or two about football. I've been breaking down extra film work this week, so we'll talk to him about that. But in terms of this weather and catching the football, the one thing Brandon Bridge, he has a strong arm, but he is not very good in terms of his touch.
Yep.
And I don't know if you can correct that on the fly, but that's going to be a challenge for these Ryder receivers catching a hard ball that's coming at you 100 miles an hour from that guy.
Yeah, luckily they've been catching, it's been these conditions all week, so they kind of got a couple chances to catch that hard ball and feel how much I must suck to catch that ball.
Yeah.
But at least they're used to it. They know what's going in, you know. The adrenaline gets pumping on a day like today, and like you don't necessarily feel that pain as much as you would during a practice situation. So it is going to be a challenge, but I hope we're up for the challenge.
I'm really looking forward, Paul Walder, to seeing how the likes of Kate Cannon, who has got some speed, how Kyran Moore, how Williams Lambert even catches the ball in cold weather. It's one thing to do it a little bit in practice, but to actually do it in a game when all the chips are on the table, like you're taught as a receiver to catch a ball in your hands, but you're more susceptible to catching into your body now.
Absolutely, and guys like Shaq Evans, I mean, there's a lot of guys that are probably unfamiliar with this weather, especially come game time, and they're younger guys. There's an element to it. You know, you almost got to be conditioned to play in this weather, not only for mentally, but like you said, catching the ball. Guys like Weston Dressler, who's got some of the best hands I've ever seen, and he's notoriously been known to sometimes be a body catcher because he knows how to crest the ball into his body, and it helps him obviously on cold days like this because it's going to be a challenge for sure.
Hamilton has taken BC to the woodshed in the Eastern semifinal right now. It's 21-0 right now in the second quarter. Luke Tasker, I know, is a touchdown in this game as we've just got the TVs on here at Harvard Studio 620. We welcome you to come on down early and watch the game, get some snacks here, and to listen to our show. And now on a punt return, but there's a flag down, so this one's probably coming back.
There's a no yards at the beginning of it. That'd be interesting.
It's all the way back to the house. It's all the way back to the house for a touchdown for Hamilton. But the Tiger Cats off to a good start with June Jones. But let's finish our thoughts on the Ryder quarterbacking here. Mm-hmm. You knew reading the tea leaves that for them to bring in Drew Tate,
things weren't going well.
It had to be something serious. And to list four quarterbacks on the depth chart, the Riders haven't confirmed it. But I'd be really surprised if Zach Collaros is out there on the field here today.
Yeah, it hasn't been long enough. Three concussions in one season, a third one being a bad one there. Like, you know, like it just hasn't been long for him to recover, you know. So it's I'm actually happy if he's not out there. Yeah. I'd be happy about that because I don't think he can afford to take another hit right now.
So why then, just be playing devil's advocate, why have him on the field practicing? Why have him out there practicing if he hasn't if he's not good to go?
Because they were hoping like heck that he would actually like he'd kind of make that big recovery.
And he was hoping too.
He was trying as hard as he could to get out there because he feels he wants to play in this game really bad. It's playoffs. These are the games you play on. He really wanted to play, but like sometimes there's just not enough time.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a great question, Ballsy, because I was thinking the exact same thing. You can kind of either play or you can't play, especially when it comes to the head, right?
Mm-hmm. You're either clear or not clear.
Yeah, you're not a day-to-day kind of guy normally. They usually have a pretty good idea, obviously, with the concussion protocol being, you know, they think it's a minimum 7 or 10 days symptom-free. So that really confused me as well, and I don't know if it was just to kind of smoke and mirrors and make sure that people don't know. But to me, if you know, what's the point of having him out there if he's not going to play?
This reeks of 2014, and I don't say that negatively. God. With Darian Durant going down, and then Kerry Joseph coming back.
Yep.
The only difference between Kerry Joseph and Drew Tate is Kerry Joseph had a few games in the regular season to kind of massage things, and of course he had that horrible semifinal game where he threw five interceptions, and you guys barely lost that ball game to Edmonton and Chris Jones.
I remember that.
But this kind of reeks of that. Can we expect Drew Tate to be a factor in this game? Can he be a positive factor in this game with not having any playing time since May? Like, he's been done. He's been coaching since May. To come here in his first game in frigid temperatures, playing in a playoff game with it turned up to 12.
Well, he has that experience. He's played in these sort of games before, so that the game won't be too big for him. You know, so that'll be helpful. You know, he won't be getting too hyped up. He'll just kind of be able to do his thing. In regards to the offense, he's played this offense before. I'm sure some of the language is different, but like he's familiar with the concepts.
Half the league runs this offense.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So he has that familiarity as well. He probably just has to learn some new terms for an old concept in his head. So it's possible for him. Yeah, I think he can step in and play. That's a lot to ask for a guy coming off the street after, like, you know, like I said, KJ had a couple games to play. Like, here, that's a lot to ask for a guy to walk into a playoff game and win it for you. Ugh.
I would agree normally with you, but this is the reality. If he has to go on the field, it's probably because what's going on the field is not very good.
Yep.
So he can't be any worse, right? And that's probably what I'm thinking from a mentality standpoint. If Drew does have to take the field, it's probably because Brandon isn't playing overly well, or Watford or whoever else is going to end up going in after him. So at that point in time, I mean, Drew Tate's known to be a bit of a cowboy. You know, kind of goes in there. He's got moxie. He's arrogant. He's got some confidence to himself. So I don't think he'll be any worse if he does have to get in the game.
By the way, that Tiger Cats punt return for a touchdown was called back in a blocking infraction. So we're about 9.5 to go here in the second quarter. Hamilton leading the BC Lions 21-0. And Mazzoli, who is battling a bit of a knee injury, just throws a pass underneath for about 5 yards. So June Jones has his team rolling. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to one of the graybeards in the Canadian Football League. He's back, and this is a special game for him. It's the Where Are They Now segment with a twist as we talk with Weston Dressler. This is Rough Rider Game Day across the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network.
Time now for Where Are They Now. We're a little different twist on this. We're speaking with current Bomber, former Rider, Weston Dressler. How's it feel to come back in the stadium with all the chips on the table?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you get to the playoffs, it's fun, and I'm sure it's going to be a great atmosphere out there, so looking forward to it.
We'll talk about that more in a second, but how are you feeling? It's kind of, you know, you've had a couple nicks and bruises as the season's gone along.
Yeah, feeling good. You know, anytime you are feeling relatively healthy going into the playoffs, that's a good thing. It's a long season, and as you get... Obviously, you get a little bit older. Some things hurt a little bit more than they used to, but right now I'm feeling good and excited about the game.
Yeah, so what's the coldest game you've played in the CFL? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think it was the West Final in Calgary in 2010. That one was cold. I think that was the first time I was actually out on the field in a game. I remember being in the huddle, and they were reviewing a fumble. I think it was a fumble. They were reviewing something. We were in the huddle with the offense, and it was taken, it seemed like forever. And I remember Darian at the time was just like, use some words to express that they should hurry up.
Yeah.
And we all just kind of started laughing. I'm like, man, it is really cold out here. I think that's the first time that I've ever been on the field, you know, thinking about, yeah, it is really cold.
How much of it is mental when you're going in a game like this and the weather's like this?
A lot of it. I mean, I think you can only do so much to stay warm without inhibiting yourself, wearing too many clothes or whatever it is that's going to slow you down. So it's inevitable that it's going to be a little chilly under whatever you're wearing. So mentally, stay focused on the game and the task at hand. Easier said than done, but I think if you put your mind to it and focus on it, you can overcome the cold.
What do you wear in the game? Do you just wear your basic stuff you wear normally?
Just a couple more layers usually. Try not to do too much. You don't want to have too much on, but as much as you can without it slowing you down. And as much as you need to stay warm enough to play.
Can you cramp up pretty bad in weather like this? You know, I know in the heat you cramp up. Can you have the same type of effect where you get pulled groins, pulled hams, and guys forget to hydrate too in games like this?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue. Sometimes it starts to get cold out and guys kind of, you're not sweating as much. You're not, you know, gasping for that air quite as much because it's not as hot. So you kind of forget and get a little lazy about drinking the water and all that stuff. So I think that's the biggest issue is you kind of forget to drink water because you're not as physically tired as you are in the heat.
Yeah.
But yeah, it poses a little different challenge in the heat.
No, I know you'd like to have 270-yard touchdowns in this game for sure, but in a game like this, would you like to be on the field for 8, 10, 12 plays? Not only to keep yourself warm, but it wears down that defense too.
Yeah, absolutely. when you're moving around and running and on the field, it seems like you're warmer than you maybe actually are. So anytime we can string together some long drives, that'll be a good thing.
Okay, I don't want to dwell too much more on the weather, but what's worse, your feet or your hands in a game like this as a receiver?
That's a good question. They're both, you're fighting them both usually, especially, you know, if you get snow the couple days before where the turf kind of is a little frozen. That can be when you get the issues with the toes.
Yeah.
Hands are always cold. I mean, you walk outside right now without gloves on or even light gloves, your hands are going to get cold, but got the hot packs, you know, the hand warmers, all that stuff. Do everything you can, and really it's just a matter of some mental toughness as a receiver. When the ball's coming, you know it's going to
sting.
It's going to sting a little bit, but still got to make the catch.
But is it, you're taught to catch the ball in your hands, keep it away from your body, but are you kind of more prone to making the body catches?
Sometimes, yeah. In weather like that, when it gets really cold, even if it's snowing a little bit, the ball's a little slick, you just find a way to catch it. And, you know, I try to tell the guys all the time, use your eyes as much as you can. Catch the ball with your eyes first and foremost.
Okay.
However you get it done, get it done.
Who's got the advantage? I asked Kolaros this, he didn't really say. Who's got the advantage in a game like this, the offense or the defense?
Find out.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you got to catch a cold ball. You got to hold on to a cold ball, but you also know where you're going on the play, where they got to react on kind of shady field conditions.
Yeah, I mean, there's pros and cons of both sides, I think, when it comes to cold. Obviously, I think the biggest thing with the cold is the ball's a little slicker. It's a little harder, sometimes harder to hold on to. So, you know, defense will be punching at it, trying to force those turnovers. And I think that's where you get into the biggest advantage for the defense is it sometimes not becomes easier, but it can be easier to create turnovers in the cold. So offensively, you got to focus on that and then take advantage of the field when you can.
Last time you played a playoff game here was the 2013 Grey Cup in another stadium in a green and white uniform. You're now in a blue and gold, but you've talked about how good this locker room is. Does this locker room compare with your 2013 locker room in terms of chemistry?
Yeah, it does. And you know, 2013 was a special year. We had a special group of guys, and that's what it takes. That's what it takes to win a Grey Cup, win playoff games, to have a locker room like that. It doesn't mean you're always going to win, and to not have a locker room like that doesn't mean you're not going to win. So, I mean, it helps. I think the biggest thing for me is it makes it more enjoyable. It makes it more enjoyable to do it for the guys around you and just to be just as happy when the guy next to you makes a big play as if it was yourself. You know, I think that's the biggest thing for me when everyone's doing it for each other.
Okay, so you're closer to the end than you are the start. We're not, you know, you might have a couple more years left. Do you soak in a game like this today with the Riders and you're in what you call your secondary home now, going to be have a lot of friends and family here. Do you soak it in a little more than maybe Weston Dressler of 5 years ago would do?
Yeah, I maybe. You know, I think really for me, ever since it was my second year when I missed the playoff run in 2009,
right.
I was out with the broken leg. Ever since then, I've really tried to focus on appreciating the moment because you never know when you're going to be done. You know, I've seen so many guys come and go, have a big moment, and then a year later, you're wondering where they are, if they're still playing football, things like that. So I've always tried to stay in the moment and appreciate every opportunity you have to play this game.
Okay, but in that saying that, how long would you like to play for?
As long as somebody wants me around and as long as my body allows me to keep playing at a high level.
You know, I know your buddy Darian Durant's talking about, and we're going to talk about on the broadcast here, he's talking about maybe wanting to make a comeback. What do you think's the hardest thing for guys to give up, you know, with the game of football?
I mean, for me personally, it'll be the locker room. Just being with the guys on a daily basis, mm-hmm. on a consistent basis, and working with them and having that joy of achieving goals together and things like that. So it's not necessarily making a big play or something like that. It's just being around the guys.
I know you're a pro athlete. You're just thinking about winning this game. But is it kind of weird or extra special for you to still come back here, still play? You're still recognized in this town. People still love you in this town. You still go to the banquets. I know when I'm emceeing, I always give you a shout out. You tell me to shut up. But how does it feel to come back here? Is it extra special for you?
I mean, it's always a little different playing here than anywhere else for me. Just from the 8 years of history, it's. Played a lot of football here in front of these fans, and they're awesome. They're always very supportive and provide tremendous atmosphere. So, it's always a little different, you know. It just stirs up a little different emotions than playing out in Toronto or in BC, something like that. Yeah.
Lastly, you seem to be the good luck charm for this team. When you play, they generally win. How do you feel about that?
Hopefully that continues then.
No kidding. And what do you think the keys are to beating the Rough Riders? Their team, they had 11 defensive touchdowns and 4 return touchdowns. What's the key for them? Or for you to beat them, I mean?
That's just it right there. Their defense has done a tremendous job all year of creating turnovers and scoring off those turnovers. You know, for us offensively, it's take care of the football, make the big plays when we have those opportunities, because you don't get a lot of them against them. They do a good job of pretty much just about everything. Defensively, they get after the quarterback like no other team in the league, and they got a secondary that really knows how to play the football in the air and make plays on the ball. So you take care of the ball, and when you have that opportunity, you got to make the most of it, because you don't get many of them.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, in all my years covering this team, you're one of my favorite guys to cover. I call you a friend. I hope you have a great game, but I hope the Riders still win. Is that fair to say?
Fair to say. All right, thanks.
Appreciate it, buddy. Yeah. Thanks, man. Appreciate that. Good luck, eh? So I'm going to ask you, so is the...
Want to thank our sponsors, KFC and Waxy's Bobcat, here on Rough Rider Game Day, coming to you from Harvard Studio 620 with Chris Best and Paul Waldo. On the out-of-town scoreboard, Hamilton is demolishing BC in the East semifinal 28-0. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Hey, the Riders added Drew Tate, and they also added Corey Johnson. He goes by CJ. He doesn't like to be called Corey. In fact, he likes to be called Poop ahead of being called Corey. That is his nickname. We caught up with him after practice this week and talked about that and joining the Riders from the hated Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Things wasn't working out in the peg. I left and gave me a call and felt right, so I came down.
What wasn't working out in Winnipeg for you?
Just everything, you know. It was just a lot going on that I just wasn't, you know, a person can only deal with so much. You know, you love the game, but it's like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that was going on behind doors that I was just like, you know, I just wasn't feeling it, so.
Anything you
want to
talk about that wasn't really clicking?
I don't do all the boasting and stuff, but nah, it was just, you know, they told me some things that ain't sit right with me, you know. It was like, And then you know, I just don't really want to go into too many details. You know, I ain't trying to be one of those guys. But, you know, I sit down and talk with the coaches and stuff, and, you know, they told me how it was going to turn out this year. I didn't think it was going to turn out like that. You know, they told me that they was going to sit me at some point regardless on how it goes. So it was just so much. It was just like, man, you know, I just wasn't feeling it.
So you asked for your release.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for it
like the day of. I told him like a month in advance that I was going, you know, I told him I was going to give him time to recruit somebody to replace me, because I was like, you know, I love my team and I ain't just want to leave them high and dry. So I told him, like, you know, at the beginning of the month, that at the end of the month, I was getting up out of there. So.
Because practice roster guys have a role. Like you have to go against them in practice.
It's
responsibility. That's a big team that's quitting on your team, isn't it?
Exactly. And I just didn't want to leave my team high and dry at the end of the day. But I had to get up out of that because they was trying me.
why did things feel right here that son here?
Well, I always liked the atmosphere, the team vibe. So, and then they played Winnipeg first. So, I had to come down and give me a little piece of the action.
I was going to say, does it feel like a bit of a grudge match?
Oh, yeah. Definitely for me, it's a grudge match. I can tell them too. It's a grudge match for me. Like, I'm out for blood.
did you bring a playbook when you came here? Can you give us some insight?
Sometimes I wish I did, but I'm on defense, so my playbook wouldn't have mattered anyway.
Can you tell us how you got the nickname Poop?
Yeah. I did an interview in college. They asked me why my weight was going up and down. I told them I don't know, probably because I poop a lot or something. and it blew up from there. So I just can't get rid of it, so I embraced it.
It's kind of an interesting name.
Yeah, I mean, it motivates me, though, because it's like, if I play bad, then people going to call me Poop for real. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So you play good, then it's like Poop the shit. I mean, sorry, my language. It's one of those things that I kind of embrace,
What does your mom think of you? Your parents think of you having a nickname like that, though?
I mean, it's, my mom don't care. She called me CJ anyway, so, it's a nickname thing.
In terms of what went wrong in Winnipeg, you obviously, no disrespect to your teammates, was it the coaches or the management?
It wasn't none of my teammates. It was the organization. They talked to me about certain things and some things they didn't tell me, but it was just certain things that they did tell me that was like, after a while, I just couldn't take it. You know what I'm saying? It was just like, because it wasn't one of those. You wasn't playing good. It was just a business. Like, I kept hearing it's a business. So I had to make a business decision too. So y'all doing business, I'm doing business. It's a business. And I got my business up out of that.
Poop Johnson in our profiles feature, Harvard Studio 620. We're coming to you live from here with Chris Best and Paul Waldy. You're laughing. You like him.
You know what I tell you, Ballsy? I've always told you I love your interviews, but that one might be my favorite in years.
He's playing against his old team. Mike O'Shea was not happy when the Riders plucked him off the practice roster. He's inserted in the lineup. How much juice can a guy like that bring when we like to call intangibles in the game of sports, game of football. That's an intangible. He's got something to prove.
Yeah, he's got that extra motivation for sure. First off, I have to say, D-tackles are a nasty bunch, as you can see from that guy. Like, that's definitely a D-tackle he's talking like there with his sort of nickname and everything. But no, he's going to be extra fired up. He's had to go against these guys in practice for weeks and weeks and weeks and couldn't really tee off on them the way he wanted to because he was on the P-squad that they have to play. That's kind of relationship you have to have. So I'm sure he thinks he's better than these guys, and he's looking for a chance to finally prove, like, I'm better. Watch, I'm going to get a bunch of sacks on these guys I had to practice against for weeks and weeks. Like, he's definitely going to be fired up, and as you hear it, he's got a chip on his shoulder.
And it's nice to see him inserted with Mikael Brooks going down. That's a good addition. He had some pretty good stats before he was placed on the
practice
squad.
Yeah, he was a decent player. I remember watching him.
He was a decent player. Yeah. When we're speaking in the interior of that D-line, Paul Waldo, you got to mention a guy like Eddie Steele. He's had a heck of a year in his role.
Almost called a comeback season for a guy like Eddie.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I think he was signed really, really late. If I'm not mistaken, I think
one
it was
of the last
day
signings.
Before training camp.
Yeah.
I'm assuming they either might have had something worked out with him, or they just felt like he was going to be around here. You watch some of the interviews, and he's speaking. His leadership, I think, is pretty evident. He's a veteran. He's been around. He's a really good dude, and I'm super excited for him. And he's really turning it up.
All right, so fellas, let's go back to Dressler's interview in the Where Are They Now segment. Here's a guy that's been through it all. 33 years old, and let's face it, he's, as I said in the interview, he's closer to the end than the beginning.
Yep.
I like watching just football players. I've always loved Weston Dressler. I think he's a quality guy, as you guys know. He's been a heck of a performer. And when he plays, his team wins football games. Mm-hmm. This game is tailor-made for a Weston Dressler. I mean, he knows how to play in cold weather.
He absolutely does. He's done a lot of good stuff for us during some cold weather games. I'm hoping not, though. I'm hoping, we have some great DBs, I've seen Dressler. The footing's not going to be the best out there, which might be to his advantage, might not be. I don't know. I'm cheering for the Riders here, so I can't hope for too good of a dresser game, as much of a friend of mine he is.
As I said, I hope he has a big game, but the Riders still win. Who's got the advantage? I'll ask you. You're a defensive guy. He's in the trenches, and I'll get to him in a second. And him, I mean Paul, Chris Best. But Paul Waldo, who has the advantage right now, the DB or the receiver?
You know what? Because the weather is so cold, I always feel like the receivers are probably going to have an advantage. I think, you know, if it's raining, if it's really wet, you know, wide receivers are at a disadvantage, obviously, because dealing with the elements of trying to catch the football, it being wet. And I used to love as a player, even as a coach now, I love when it pours. I just pray for torrential downpours. Because, you know, you got to
be able to run the rock. When you're covering Duke Williams or something.
Absolutely, absolutely. But you know what? I think today it'll be a little bit more advantageous for the receivers. They know where they're going. They know where they got to get to. And, you know, for a lot of, you know, guys who are not used to this weather, hitting guys in this weather isn't the most enjoyable.
You know, we talk about receivers not being able to catch and being unsure. How about a guy like Nick Marshall, who's a defensive back, who's never played in weather like this probably, especially this cold with footing like this, and he's a guy that likes to cheat. Like, as a defensive back, what's your mindset in a game like this as you go into a game like this? What's your mindset in terms of your footing and how you play your guy? And
you kind of got to slow it down until you get your footing and you kind of get a feel for the game and really probably got to be, you know, better mentally. You know, your vision's got to be better. Your eyes got to be on point because, once again, the footing's not going to be that great. So your mind's going to have to do the legwork, I think, for the rest of your body and in conditions like this where you can't find traction.
Bestie, as an offensive player, as I mentioned to Weston Dressler, you want to string together 8, 10, 12 play drives.
Yep.
Riders can run the football. Their O-line's been good this year. Winnipeg is the best running football team. They've got Andrew Harris, and we'll get into that in a minute. But I don't know. That's going to be a key. Can the Riders stay on the field for 8, 10 plays?
Absolutely, because with Medlock back there, like they're gonna have some long fields they have to go against here. So, like, yeah, they have to stay on the field, give their defense a break, you know, get some good time of possession there. So they have to be able to run the ball and kind of complete those short passes and the medium passes, just kind of stay on schedule here. So it's, yeah, time of possession is going to be very important today, and it's definitely going to be a field position battle.
Waldo, what's the coldest game you've ever played in?
Oh.
In your life?
The 2006 Vanier Cup.
That was cold.
We hosted here,
which was,
I think, minus 32 with the windshield, which was insane.
How'd you stay warm?
Didn't.
What's worse? I asked Dressler this. What's worse, feet or toes?
For me, always.
Or feet or hands, I mean.
Me, always my hands. I think the feet, you can kind of, it's different. You're always kind of running. You can keep your body warm, but my hands and limbs. And then you got to be able to tackle, right? You got to be able to grab guys. You got to be able to rip for footballs. And you got to, hated the hands for sure. But I just hated the weather, period.
So how does the weather affect you in the interior? They're battling those nasty D tackles, as you like to say.
Oh, we love it, you know. Like, it's as offensive line in general. Like, this is, first of all, it's weather made to run the ball, which offensive line has to like. Second, with the footing being what it is and everything's being a little more slippery, those D tackles and DNs have been running around like all summer, you know, making it look bad. All of a sudden they're slower, they're not ready, and they don't want to hit as much because these American guys aren't used to this sort of cold. So all of a sudden what was their advantage becomes your advantage now. And like, if you're built to Canadian offensive linemen are just built to play in this weather. We've been playing this weather our whole lives. American defensive linemen who just came up from Florida or something like that, they're not built to play in this weather. So it's definitely an advantage for us.
That's a good point. You know, this is a game where, you know, like, and no disrespect, but I'm just throwing names out there. Guys like Darvin Adams and KD Cannon and those kind of guys, the slick, finesse kind of players, Nick Marshall.
Yep.
They're great anytime, but I mean, they're especially great in July and August when it's optimum weather.
Yep.
This is the type of weather where Neil Hughes, Chris Best, Jason Claremont, those kind of guys, Andrew Harris, this is built for them, right?
It really is, because, like, yeah, you have to run the ball. You have to be able to deal with the elements. Like, you know, like Dressler, I was on that team with Dressler in 2010, and I actually distinctly remember that timeout he was talking about where there was a fumble and they were reviewing the fumble and everyone just froze. And we froze, but the Calgary defensive line especially froze even more than us. And after that timeout, I was just standing in the field for 5 minutes in minus 35. They didn't want to hit anymore. And if you don't want to hit anymore in a playoff game, like, you're done. Like, it's game over, you know, because it's a very physical game. And if you don't have that desire to hit anymore, like, it's over for you.
Very similar experience, obviously, in 2013, Bestie, when we went over and played in the Western Final. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the elements weren't as cold, but we were still in, I think, that minus 15 range or whatever it was.
Yep.
And it was cold. And you could see them, that Stampeder sideline, get worn down. And by the end, we ran the ball. Sheets had that long drive towards the end of the game. And they just wanted no business. They had to get us off the field. I mean, the game was still in reach,
yeah.
Right? And they knew we were running the ball. They stacked the box, and they just we were so much more physical than they were because they didn't want to deal with it.
Yep.
So, what's the coldest game you've played in?
2010 Western Final. I was told it was minus 35 in the field.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, it was a cold one.
So, but how does a guy like you? I know why you do it because you don't want anybody to grab any excess of stuff, especially in the O line. So a lot of you guys go sleeveless. But
it's the look, man. It's the look.
Yeah, I know it's the look.
You look
but,
tough.
But let's be honest. No, let's be honest. I mean, you're human. Give me a break. So what do you,
you numb over what, like
what
after
do,
a while.
What do you do to get around that? Like, how do you get over the mental block of that?
Because first off, you're so fired up, especially me. I would be so fired up, full of adrenaline, that I just kind of numb over, and I wouldn't really feel it, especially when I was a younger guy, like in 2010. Like, it was a cold game, but I wasn't that cold. I was just so fired up and ready to basically fight. That I didn't, you know, got to have the arms out. And like, also, not to mention, our quarterback, Darian, never wore sleeves.
Yep.
So if your quarterback's not wearing sleeves, you definitely, as an offensive lineman, can't wear sleeves. It's kind of, it's totally a macho thing. It's a toughness thing. But we all believed it, and it seemed to help us.
Now, let me stand corrected for all you listeners out there. I was a guy that always wore sleeves. Because I'll tell you, I'm not trying to be tough for anybody. The toughness for me was trying to be successful on the football field and get off. So I wasn't trying to fool anybody. Ballsy, smaller guys like us, you know, you're dealing with hypothermia and God, who knows?
Well,
you know?
I'll tell you what. There's a very smart sportscaster in this town that once said, anybody that thinks this is playoff football or playoff weather is an idiot.
It's extreme.
And so I want to just get each of your thoughts on this, okay? Bestie looks at me like a sour milk look on his face. We talk so much about concussions, and we talk so much about player safety, and we're worried about player safety. I got news for you. The league isn't so much worried about player safety. They're worried about getting sued, okay? Let's just be honest.
True.
But with that in mind, if we're worried about player safety, why are we playing in weather like this? This is not football weather. Paul, I'll start with you. Like this, should this league not serious? I know they moved it up a week this year, okay? We need to have this Grey Cup done by the end of October. This Grey Cup needs to be done by the end of October or the first week in November. First weekend of November. Last week should have been the Grey Cup weekend.
I couldn't agree with you anymore. Yeah, I wouldn't be upset if they moved the season up. And I agree. I mean, there are some places, you know, where, you know, you could, you know, playing in BC, you know, it's decent, the air there indoors and stuff. But to me, -5, -10, okay. But when you're getting into the -20s and -30s, to me, it's a safety hazard. I think it's a liability for a lot of players. They're safe. I mean, even just your joints and your body.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah. Listening to Weston's segment there, you don't even want to walk to the vehicle in -30 weather.
Yeah.
You know, I hate it.
Yeah.
I don't like getting into a cold car, for crying out loud.
Guys had two hips replaced.
Absolutely.
And guys had two hip surgeries or whatever.
Yep.
And you're banged up. I know you're tough, and I know you're a physical guy and everything like that, even though you're going to sit up in the alumni lounge today and not come down with me on the sidelines.
I did my time
out
there.
Yeah, you did your time. Well, I'm still doing my time, bestie. But, honestly, this is not in favor of player safety right here, this weather.
Doesn't matter. I love these games. Growing up playing football, you know, this is when the weather got cold. That was me. That meant the game meant something. That meant it's playoff time. It's time.
You're
to
all
play
the guys
real.
Talking like that. It's a privilege to
yeah,
play
like
this weather.
When it gets cold, it's like it means it's time. You know, there's no more light games. There's no more, oh, don't worry, we'll get them next week. It's now time to play. And not to mention, like, you mean, speaking of the 2010, like your 2006 Vanier, the 2010 Western Final, those cold, cold games. Mm-hmm. Those legendary games people
That's
talk
true.
About for
you
years,
know?
You know. No one talks about a game that was 10 degrees out and, like, you know, a bit of rain, like those cold, cold games. Like, those are those legendary games you get a chance to be involved
swaying
in.
Me. Real interesting from Chris
swaying
Best.
Me. He's swaying me.
He's not, yeah. You know, you go back and forth. Pick a side.
I know. It's hard. I agree with, I mean, you're right, though. That's, I mean, you know, when you're playing at this time, when it is this cold, you are fortunate.
When we come back, we'll hear from Luke Molitor. Molitor's matchup across the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. And the fans are filing in here to Harvard Studio 620 as we're on set here, and we're at halftime in Hamilton where the Tiger Cats are roughing up the BC Lions 28-0. We'll talk about that in a second. Fans are filing in looking like they're going to an ice fishing tournament. I got Luke Mulliner here. Like Mulliner, so now you're up in the booth.
Yeah.
And that's great. I'm on the sidelines.
Yeah, poor you.
Yeah, so poor me. But come on, this is not football weather.
Yeah, it is. Hey, this is what it's about. You want to sign up to play for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Guess what? In the playoff game, this is what it's going to be like, and it's an advantage, right, when you get to sit out there. And
you
it's
like
cold.
Playing in this?
No, absolutely not. But
I agree with
him. Here's the thing. When you're ready to compete, when that whistle blows, guess what goes out the window? The cold. You're ready to roll, right? And I think that both these teams here have probably been practicing outside all week, and I'm looking forward to this game. I really am. I think that this is going to be a good game. It's one of those games, though, that can get out of hand with a couple mistakes. But, again, you're looking at three games where the winner of each game has won the turnover battle. I think it was 3-1 for the Riders Labor Day, 4-1 the Banjo Bowl, and when they got blown out 31-0, they lost the turnover battle 5-1. So again, you got to be you got to have ball security at a premium today.
All right, so Luke, as we're getting into this football game and we're thinking about things here, Brandon Bridge most likely will be the starting quarterback here for the Rough Riders. They haven't confirmed that Zach Kolaros isn't playing, but it's most likely that Brandon Bridge will be the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Now, normally for other teams it'd be a catastrophic thing, but the Rough Riders have use this template all season long.
Yeah,
and as you and I joked about this yesterday, we called each other. I'll let you have the analogy.
Yeah.
It's not like we're losing Aaron Rodgers here. No disrespect to Kolaros, but it's not like Aaron Rodgers is knocked out.
Not at all. No, we talked about it more being like sort of a Joe Flacco going down deal and having Lamar Jackson come into the game, right? One of the things I was thinking about on the way over here, I'm a big college ball fan, NCAA, and I remember when Syracuse was playing Clemson earlier on this year. Clemson's got a stud quarterback, 5-star rating. He's a freshman. Trevor something or other, and he went down. And Clemson's third-string quarterback had to finish the game against Syracuse, who at the time was the hottest team in the NCAA. And guess what? They won. They won on great defense, and they won on special teams with the third-string quarterback. That third-string quarterback went in there. He ran the ball, managed the game fine, made a couple easy throws here and there. And I'm not saying Brandon Bridge is a third-string quarterback, but like, there's no extra pressure on him. The Riders aren't coming in here and they're not saying, listen, Brandon, it's all on you. Absolutely not. He's got a great cast of characters around him. I'll tell you what, I love the fact that Cam Marshall is the starting running back today.
Yep.
I was talking to Matt Dominguez here last week about Cam Marshall, and one of the guys he reminds us of is Wes Cates, right? He's a guy that can really move the sticks. If it's those second and 4 to 5 yard situations, you can rely on a guy like Cam. So the pressure's off. Listen, just go in there, manage the game. Obviously, the RPO is a huge option for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders today, right? Identifying whether to hand off or maybe pull it and run. Use your athleticism today. But the biggest thing for Brandon Bridge is the first couple throws. I think that he's got to make his first couple throws, as simple as they may be, but just to get him some confidence. And again, play good defense. Special teams is huge today. Flip the field with a return game and covered down well, and this is a winnable game.
So will the Riders win this game if they don't score defensively or special teams wise?
You know what I was thinking about, because I knew you were going to ask me that eventually, and I think that the Riders have to set up a score through defense or special teams.
Short
today.
Field.
I think that if the Riders win today, it'll be something like 16-14, those type of things. I mean, you're looking at a Winnipeg team. Like, let's not discount them.
Yeah.
I think the last three or four games coming into this game, they've had at least three touchdown drives in a game. Okay, so that's touchdown.
You're right. Yeah. But in every game, they're the only team to have two touchdown drives, and then you're right with the three touchdowns.
So they're a team that can put a drive together. So you've got to say, okay, you know what? They're a team capable of at least putting 14 points on the board in a really good day, right? So, again, I like a low-scoring game here for the Saskatchewan. I think that, you know, there's scores I'm seeing on Twitter, 33-26, 28-25 for whoever team. I don't think it's going to be that type of game.
Just what you were saying there, just to back you up, the Bombers offense has had a 7-game streak with at least 3 TD drives, and they're the only club in the CFL to have 2 touchdown drives in every game in 2018. So they're going to, you could chalk them up, like you said, for 14 to 17 points for sure with their weapon, Justin Medlock.
Yeah, so you know what? I mean, and then you look at the formula Saskatchewan's going, all right? You say, okay, you might need four field goals out of Lowther. That gives you 12 and one score. Look at that. Magically, you're at 19, right? So again, there's ways to skin this cat here, and I'm looking forward to it. And I think that there's going to be a lot of fans out here, which is also a good thing because they need to make some noise today.
Yeah, for sure, given the energy. Okay, so just to wrap up, what's your matchup here on this frozen Sunday?
Well, I'll tell you what, I can't talk about Cam Marshall and the success of the run game enough. It's imperative for success for Saskatchewan, and if you're going to have a decent run game, you're going to have to get hats on number four, Adam Big Hill. That's the difference maker for this Winnipeg defense. Yep. Adam Big Hill has made such an impact there, so you got to get hats on him, right? If you're going with your chip blocks and double teams, you got to get offensive linemen to the second level today, find Adam Big Hill and get a block on him, and that should free up some space for Cam Marshall. Again, he's a back that's going to run his feet on contact. You're not going to take Cam Marshall down with one. I love Cam Marshall. I think he's a cold weather back as well. I'm going to be honest with you. If Trey Mason was here, I'd worry about Trey Mason putting it on the ground today.
Yeah.
Right? But Cam Marshall, I think that, obviously, me saying that, now he's going to go out and fumble it a couple times. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, again, get hats on Adam Big Hill. That is a huge part of the game plan today moving forward for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
That's Luke Mulliter. Mulliter's matchup. Enjoy calling the first ever playoff game here at Mosaic Stadium. Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. When we come back, the last time the Riders played a playoff game here at Mosaic Stadium was, well, in Regina at the old Mosaic Stadium, was the 2013 Grey Cup, and Darian Durant was the quarterback. We'll talk to Doubles in the Doubles Take coming up next here on the Rough Rider Radio Network. Live on set here at Harvard Studio 620, it's Michael Ball along with former Rider greats Paul Waldo and Chris Best, and we're going to be joined by Darian Durant in a second. All our guests coming to you live on the Mr. Lube hotline. Get fast, warranty approved, top to bottom maintenance at any of the three Mr. Lube Regina locations. Want to thank our operator back at the station here in Regina, Jake Neufeld, for his great work. Want to thank our on-site engineers, Bob Salisbury and Ryan Mishork. I want to thank our program director, Abby White, who's down here helping us out as well. Okay, hey, when we're looking at the stats here and you're looking for some silver linings for the Riders now that it looks like Zach Kolaros won't play, although once again, want to reiterate that hasn't been confirmed by the team, but all signs pointing that Brandon Bridge will be the quarterback today. Riders are playing just their fifth home West semifinal in the last 30 years. In those four games, the Riders were 3-1, but since 1965 have staged the game on 10 occasions, going 8-2. Now, the last time the Saskatchewan Rough Riders had a game here, a home playoff game, And I want to point something out. They don't consider the Grey Cup part of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They don't. So this is the first time the Riders have played the Blue Bombers in the playoffs since 2003 when they beat them in the in Winnipeg there at Canadian Stadium. So technically the 2007 Grey Cup win was not a playoff meeting. But the last time the Riders played a playoff game here on home turf was the 2013 semifinal. Let's head out on the phone line, the Mr. Lube hotline. Say hi to Darian Durant. How are you, Darian?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, Darian. Now, I know we're having a little bit of phone issues with you being off wherever you are in your palatial castle.
Yeah,
so if you can try to walk out till we get some.
He's got a castle.
Yeah, that's right. He's got a castle. Hey, Darian, you remember that 2013 Western semifinal against the BC Lions, a BC Lions team that played a near-perfect road game. We get to the fourth quarter. Riders are losing. What's running through your head?
We can't lose. We've come too far. We've endured too much. It's now or never. And, took it upon myself to make whatever play I could that I could find necessary. And, the defense played great. You know, a lot of people out here, give me a bulk amount of the credit for that. But as a team, we just stepped it up in that fourth quarter and, we took care of business like we were supposed to on our home turf.
We got a couple of your teammates up here, Paul Waldo and Chris Best. I'll let them jump in a second, but I got to ask you. So, early on in your career, you were known for your legs. You were known for running around and making plays. You also had a good arm. But in that 2013 year, you made plays when you had to move the chains, but you were more a pocket passer kind of guy. But, man, you got in the time machine and went back to old Darian Durant in that fourth quarter using your legs. But I want to ask a guy, when you get in a zone like that, do things slow down for you? Just take us underneath the helmet there, because none of us get to feel what you felt that night.
Well, first and foremost, you know, as you get a little older, you kind of figure that you have to be there in the big games. You can't, you know, put your body on the line so much, you know, early in the season and late in that season and toward, you know, the playoff run. I was feeling healthy, and I hadn't been healthy in a long time at that part of the season in my career, and I knew that I could use my legs, and that's something that I haven't been showing a lot and that teams would kind of not be looking for. So in that fourth quarter, I remember talking to George Cortez, and he's like, look, man, they're opening up the running lane. If you see it, don't hesitate and take advantage of it. And, you know, I saw it about three times in a row, and, you know, you have to look at the wisdom of that as well with Coach Cortez. He's a guy that underrated in my opinion, but he's a smart guy. He knows a lot, and he put me in the right positions in that game in that fourth quarter.
Paul, you're on that sideline on defense watching this guy run, and you said there's two guys you go through a wall for, Anthony Calvillo and even more so Darian Durant. Yep. In the fourth quarter, what's running through your mind when you're watching Durant run around?
You know, I mean, first off, Devils, to take you back, you know, our defense wasn't really that great. You know, at halftime, obviously, we were down, and Travis Hadley, I think, had like 75, 80 yards on the ground, and Andrew Harris had close to 100. We could not stop them. They controlled the line of scrimmage on our end, and we almost felt like we were a little helpless. And then obviously you went out there and you were unconscious is what I like to classify it as. It was superhuman, and I've watched a lot of football. I've played in four Grey Cups myself, and I've been around it all, and I've just never seen a performance like that ever, and it was magical.
Wow.
Is what it was. It was magical. It was insane.
Same. Thanks, man.
Yep.
Hey,
it was just one of those times.
It was your time.
I just remember.
I felt like every great player gets in a zone like that from time to time. So.
Besty, you're in the huddle with Darian. Did he flip a switch in the fourth quarter? Did you notice something different?
You could just tell he wouldn't be denied. Like, he could not be denied. So we had to do everything up front that we could to make sure he had that chance to make those plays. So we were out there. I mean, I loved hitting BC. I relished every chance I could to smack those guys. So it was a labor of love for us to go out there and just beat on BC's D-line and let doubles run around and make those big plays like he's a young KJ out there.
I want to ask one more Darian question a little later on about your career before we wrap up. But Darian, let's go to this game today. All signs are pointing to Brandon Bridge being the starting quarterback for the Rough Riders. We know he had a little magic and moxie last year that seems to have gone away. I don't know how much it has to do with the fact they've scaled down the playbook, which has kind of hurt his confidence, how much it has to do with his, inept play at times. But what do you see from Brandon Bridge as the key for him to being successful here today?
First and foremost, you just have to take care of the ball. Winnipeg's a very opportunistic defense. They score on defense. They cause turnovers. And I just want to see Brandon take care of the ball. I hate that, you know, his confidence has been wavered a little bit with being rotated in series early on in the season. So I'm hoping that he has his head in the right place. He has his confidence and his swagger back, because I don't like what I saw from him earlier this year. So I hope to see a new Brandon, a rejuvenated Brandon, going into this game.
Realistically, Darian, how much can Drew Tate help this football team out? I mean, he hasn't played since May. I know he's ran this offense before. He told us earlier this week, half the league runs this offense, so it's not like I don't know what I'm doing. But how, you know, in 2014 when you got hurt, they brought Kerry Jones in, and Kerry Joseph had, you know, he had three, four, five games to get acclimated to know what he was doing. And of course, it didn't turn out well in the West semifinal. But we're expecting a guy to come off the bench in minus 20 temperatures with a wind chill and not have played all year. I mean, realistically, how much of a factor could he be today?
I think if anything, he's just there in case something happens to Brandon. He just won't hurt the team. You know, he'll run the offense. He'll handle the snap, which is the one of the main things you have to do in inclement weather. You have to be able to handle the ball. Drew's played in these conditions time in and time out. So he's been in these situations before. So if he's called upon, I think he'll hand the ball off. He'll make sure that the Riders don't get in negative situations and just rely on that defense the way they've been doing all season.
I'm really interested to see how these young receivers, guys who aren't used to this, catch the football. Are you interested? Yeah. Because you've been the guy throwing to guys like this. I know Weston Dressler can catch the ball. I know Naaman Roosevelt can catch the ball. I want to know if Kyron Moore, KD Cannon, Jordan Williams-Lambert, yeah, those kind of guys can catch the ball. Or even a guy like Nick Marshall playing in the secondary. Really athletic, but he's prone to cheating at times. And when you're playing on a shady surface, how you're going to play in a game like this?
I'm very concerned. I brought this up a couple weeks ago when the weather turns and you're dealing with a lot of guys from the southern part of the United States. Well, this is probably the coldest weather they've ever felt in their life. So I know it was for me, and it's definitely an adjustment that you have to make. So I'm concerned about that. Winnipeg is a veteran team. They have guys that have been in the league a long time, played in big games. So that's a factor in my opinion.
And Andrew Harris, we can't talk enough about him. He is a mutter. He is a, this is, you know, Bestie was talking about this. Some of these young Americans, they can look good in July and August, but when the weather turns colder, it's guys like Neil Hughes, Jason Claremont, Chris Best, Darian Durant, and even a guy like, you know, Andrew Harris. This weather's built for guys like this.
You have to have that type of back. You have to have guys who've been in these situations, guys who, you know, who nothing can bother. This is going to be a mental game as well as physical. And like I said, Winnipeg has veteran guys like you named, Weston Dressler, Darvin Adams, Andrew Harris. That offensive line is intact. These guys have been in the heat of the battle. So we'll see. I'm anxiously awaiting just to see if the guys, even though they've had a week or two to practice in this weather, I'm anxious to see, you know, now it's the stage. Now it's for all the marbles, and we'll see how they react to the situation.
And we're happy that the Riders have Cameron Marshall in the backfield. He has been a nice addition for sure down the backstretch with fresh legs, which you can't underestimate. When a guy's got fresh legs, that's a big deal. I mean, he's only really hitting his mid-season or early season stride right now, and I don't think you can put enough, you know, that's a big intangible if you ask me.
Oh, no question. He has fresh legs, and he's a downhill back. He's a one-cut and get-up-field guy. This is the type of back you need in this type of game, in this type of weather. And, you know, like you said, fresh legs, we'll be able to see. Because I think the Riders are going to lean to that ground game a lot. Having Brandon Bridge in there, not a long time to prepare for this game, I think they'll lean on that run game heavy.
This game features a lot of good defenders. Of course, we know we got Charleston Hughes, Willie Jefferson, two All-Stars. And then, you know, you got guys like Sam McGuavin, who should have been an All-Star.
Yep,
you
absolutely
got the Swiss Army Knife and Toby Antigua. I mean, this defense is stacked. It's a great defense. But Adam Big Hill might be the best defender on the field, and that's no slouch against the other guys. He's a great
no
ball
question.
Player.
No question. Adam's he's a special guy.
Still don't like
guy.
That guy.
He's a special guy. I mean, if you had to sum it up in one word, it's just special. You know, he's a shorter guy at about 5'9", but he weighs about 230. He runs like a DB. He has great hips. His accelerate. I mean, you put the attributes on a sheet of paper, and he checks out in all categories. So he's a perfect guy for this Winnipeg defense, you know, centering them in a game of this magnitude.
All right, before we get your prediction, Drew Tate is back. They picked him away from the coaching ranks to come back. I know you were joking last time you were in town that Darian Durant might want to look at playing again. So I'm going to ask you straight up, Darian Durant, have you closed the door on football, or do you think you might want to give her another go?
I haven't closed the door at all.
Yes,
I'm about 50-50 right now.
There was
the
a couple
time
more.
Of year
a
when,
couple more.
You know, my palms start sweating a little bit. I want to feel the football. It's cold outside. This is my type of weather. So this is the time of year, and it has me itching very badly to play. So
would you wear sleeves today? Would you wear
right
sleeves?
Now.
Hey, would you wear sleeves
no
today?
Way. No way.
That's my quarterback.
No way.
Okay, Darian. Well, we'll check in with you as we go along here. We have you for a couple more weeks in the broadcast, depending on how this game goes, and we'll be the first to know if you decide that you're going to make a comeback. Okay, so Durant, doubles, who do you got today, Riders or the Blue Bombers, and why?
I know this is not going to be a very popular pick, but I have to go at Winnipeg. I'm looking at the Riders' quarterback situation. When you look at both defenses, in my opinion, it's number one and number two defenses in the league, so that's basically an even point right there. But I think Winnipeg's offense is a little bit better. I think they have guys like Weston Dressler, Andrew Harris, guys who've been in these type games.
Absolutely.
And experience matters. I mean, you always hear that when guys get up in age, you know, yes, you may lose a little bit of speed, but experience matters in games like this for sure. And I think Winnipeg has that edge and experience and coaching. And I just like Winnipeg in this game, being that the Riders have a big question mark at the quarterback position.
All right, Darian, well, thanks for this. We had a few Rider fans throw their arms up in disgust, but I know they still love you. You're just picking you're just picking with what you think is
that's
the logical
it.
Choice.
You know, everyone knows Omar Hardy.
All right, man. All right, well, take care. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, that's Darian Durant with a doubles take on the Rough Rider Radio Network. When we come back, we'll have more. We're going to talk about Paul Waldo and his U of S Huskies who destroyed the U of C Dinos. We'll talk about that and much more on growing the game, and we'll hear from Nick Lewis, too. He's actually been working with Brandon Bridge, doing some extra work here this week, so we'll get into that with him. You're listening to Rough Rider Game Day on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders getting set to take on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers on semifinal Sunday. Right now, it's the Hamilton Tiger Cats demolishing BC in the East semifinal. Last I saw, it was 28-0. We're coming to you live from Harvard Studio 620. I'm Michael Ball, along with former Rider greats Chris Best and Paul Waldo. We'll get to Paul and talking about his U of S Huskies in a second. I do want to mention that the Saskatchewan Rough Riders are playing the Winnipeg Blue Bombers here for the first time since 1975 in a semifinal. On that day, the Rough Riders, it was 0 Celsius, and the Rough Riders beat the Bombers 42-24. 5 kilometer an hour wind. It was balmy compared to today. So weather will be a factor in this game. Okay, weather not much of a factor yesterday. You did have wind in your face, but the U of S Huskies go into Calgary and smoke the Dinos. 43-18.
Yep.
And hand Calgary its first loss, and they're out, and you guys move on. And you guys are the Huskies. Paul Waldo, assistant coach with the Huskies. You had to be shocked that you whipped them that bad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're a great football team, and that's the scary thing I think about football. Is I always say it's not like basketball, baseball, or hockey. You're not playing a 7-game series, and you know, it's not like the better team finds a way to grind it out. You got 60 minutes, a team that turns the ball over less, and the team that makes the biggest plays is going to win. And we had a really solid game plan going in, and we knew they were kind of ripe for the take, and they haven't really lost, haven't really faced a whole lot of adversity. And like I said, Scotty Florey and Warren Musica and company, the coordinators, and Jay Friesen had a great, great game plan together.
You know, I want to... Just what you said there, I got to keep that in my brain because it can tie into this game today.
Yep.
But, you know, let's go back to that Husky game yesterday. Tyler Chow, the Calgary boy.
Monster.
I believe he played for the Thunder for a spell, did he not?
No, that was Colton Clausen.
Colton Clausen, sorry.
Both of those
Tyler
two.
Chow, Calgary boy, senior, runs for 267 yards by himself.
Yeah. I mean, he was... You know, you talk about obviously having the great Darian Durant on the panel minutes ago and listening to about guys who just felt like they wouldn't be denied. That was him. He wasn't playing his last football game yesterday. And same with Kyle Siemens and some of the other fifth-year guys. And we just went out there and physically dominated them. So it was good.
Yeah, and your secondary, pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
Lacombo, whose brother, I believe, plays for the BC Lions, had an interception and took it all the way back, like within scoring position. You guys scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
Peyton Hall had a forced fumble, Regina boy, and had
Josh
an interception.
Hagerty.
Josh Haggerty, Regina boy. Yeah. So it was a good team effort.
Yeah, it was. And you got to be damn near perfect when you play guys like this to give yourself a chance. And the kids came out. You know, we had a lot of confidence. They played with a lot of swagger. And that's the thing. You know, they were in a tight game, I think. And we pulled a tight one out last week. We faced adversity throughout the entire year, dealing with injuries and having our top players go down to just trailing and being behind in games. And we've been peaking at the right time the last three games. And it was a good way to go out there and set a statement.
How much How much better has your team gotten this year in the coaching ranks? Because Scott Flory came in late in the first year, in March, didn't really get to recruit, just threw his staff together. You guys got to get cohesion. Now you got Muzika, and you got Dimitition, and you got yourself, and, I mean, Jerry Friesen. You guys are together for a year now. Two in your second year, how much does that help?
Oh, huge. I mean, you know, it's one thing getting to know your players, but it's obviously getting to know your fellow coaches and seeing the different styles and making sure we can all mesh, because it's all about continuity. And once again, you look at it from a coaching standpoint, I think we're almost 60 years of CFL experience. I think there's 14 or 15 Grey Cups there, and I think there's like 16 Vanier Cup appearances, and there's been a lot of success within our coaching staff, and so we tried to emulate that. I mean, at the end of the day, I didn't make a single play out on the field yesterday, but I think a lot of it had
to do with coaching. You guys did a great job game planning for that.
Yeah, I mean, we were prepared. Like I said, anytime you can rush a ball for 285 yards total, and you can come away with 4 or 5 turnovers, I think you've done a pretty decent job of game planning.
Got a lot of respect for you. This guy loves football. You drive up how many times a week up there?
About 3 times a week.
3 times a week, and you fly out, and that's
a grind.
You know, you got a young son at home, and your significant other. They got to be supportive too.
Yo, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't stand a chance if she wasn't at home holding the fort down. And obviously, like I said, it's something I love to do. It's almost an escape from life and
selling homes.
Yeah, and all that. Although I love doing that. I mean, as a football player. Chris, you can attest to that. You know, once you get on the field, I think everything else is on pause, and you can go out there and be you in your truest sense.
It's probably why Darian wants to come back, right?
Absolutely.
It is, you kind of crave that feeling. The feeling of game day stepping on, it's hard to replicate, that's for sure.
So you guys got to go face the juggernaut now. Western is they won it last year, and they're ridiculous.
Yeah, they are ridiculous. And once again, though, you're playing, it's one game, and it's a cross-conference game. You know, when you go in, when we're going to play Calgary, it's always tough to have a team beat you 3 times in a row.
Now these guys haven't seen you play.
They haven't seen us play. They don't know anything. Our style of play, we do things differently than some of a lot of the Eastern teams, and we're a ground and pound kind of team, and they're a little bit more finesse in the way they do things. So it's gonna be a ball game.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to some other guys that had a big weekend too. Miller wins the 4A Provincial High School Championship as they smoked Centennial 45-0. Wow. And then, of course, we had Bishop Mahoney win the 3A Provincial High School Football Championship. 12-man. They knocked off Sheldon Williams. I think it was 43-14. But a good year for Sheldon. They won their first 3A title since 76. And then, of course, we had the 1A six-man football championship going to Hafford, defeating Hanley. 2A six-man football, Clavette defeated Waka. 2A nine-man football, Delisle defeated Indian Head. And 3A nine-man football, Lumsden defeated Humboldt. That was an interesting game because their coach, Tyler Bieber, was the radio announcer for the Humboldt Broncos team. Oh. Who passed away in that bus accident.
Yep.
And their stats man, also a Brody, Brody Hintz also played on that team. And he passed away. And then Morgan Gable is a guy who's on the hockey team and on the football team, and he's still in Saskatoon Hospital with a brain injury.
Incredible.
So that was they lose the provincial championship, but still a great season for them to overcome all that adversity, right?
Exactly. I'm sure it was an emotional season for them, and to have the sort of success they had, I'm sure helped them get through it.
Absolutely.
You know, I said I'd write this down, and I didn't. That's what it was. I think when I look back at your season with the Huskies.
Right.
Resilient.
Oh, that's
overcome adversity. You had lots of injuries. That's why I give the Riders more than a puncher's chance today. I don't think it's catastrophic. No disrespect to Zach Collaros, but it's not like Mike Riley's out and we got to throw in another guy. The Riders have gone through this all year. They've had the quarterback carousel by their own doing, and then because of Zach Collaros' injury. They're used to adversity. They're used to the grind. Yeah. I wouldn't just outrightly dismiss the Rough Riders.
I agree with you, Ballsy. I mean, you know, defense wins championships, that's the phrase. It's categorical everywhere, and they found ways this year. They've had their backs against the wall. I mean, let's go back to week 3 when they lost to the Montreal Alouettes.
We thought they were dead. We're talking crossover.
We're crossover here. I mean, God, they need to do that, and they have been able to just grind it out and be resilient and stand tall, and you got to give them credit, and you could never count a team out like that.
All right, so when we come back, we're going to speak with Nick Lewis on the Mr. Lube Hotline as we get his take on this game, and he's been working with Brandon Bridge on the side, getting him prepared for this contest against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. You're listening to Rough Rider Game Day, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. Well, they're rolling in and mostly green and white, except for this Blue Bomber fan walking in front of me, but that's okay. We need one of those guys to show us how great we are, right? Anyway, he's in his Tom Canada jersey. We're at the Harvard Studio 620. Ballsy along with Best and Waldo, although they're going to get some refreshments. And we're going to head out in the Mr. Lube hotline now and speak with Nick Lewis here, moving the chains. How are you today, Nick?
Good, I'm good. How about yourself?
Good, man. I'm watching the Hamilton Tiger Cats absolutely throttle Wally and the BC Lions 37-0. We talk about it's easier to go through the East. It's easier to go through the East. I'd rather go through the East. It never works out that way. The Eastern teams always find a way to get it done. What do you think about changing the playoff format going forward? Because every team in the West had a better record than the Eastern teams, at least better than the second place team, the Tiger Cats. Should we look at maybe just getting rid of East and West?
I mean, I think you have to keep East and West for travel purposes. But, I mean, if you want to go with a playoffs with the top six teams in the league making the playoffs, I think that makes it very interesting. But it's really hard, you know, to not have an Eastern playoff game. So that's where it comes in. If you're going to have the top other two teams hosting those playoff games, it's going to be real hard.
Yeah. I like your idea, though, Nick. I like the idea of going East and West during the regular season and then seeding them, you know, 1 and 2. The two teams with the best records get a bye. 3 plays 6, 4 plays 5, regardless of division, and then reseed them after that. I like that idea.
I really like it. And if you do it like the NFL, where one will always play the highest seed, that way they're going to always have the best chance to get to the Grey Cup. And if you're the one team, you're going to play if the sixth team or fifth team upsets the other two teams, the 3 or 4, then you're going to play that team at home with a chance to go to the Grey Cup. And that could be an Eastern team coming way out west or West team going way out east in order to do that.
I've never figured this out. You know, Eastern football, except for maybe one or two teams, is generally pretty crappy in terms of their records. The only crossovers always come from the West, never the East. Why? Because most of you guys, you know, it'd be easier, more family, more friends. You think Eastern football would be more attractive destinations for American players.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest things is most of the East teams, they do tend to go after some of the bigger profile name guys because they're trying to draw fans. You know, when you put guys in Sask, you put them in Calgary or Winnipeg or Edmonton, nobody cares who those people are before they got here. They just know they're football players, and they're going to go support them. But out in the East, you need the big-name guys, and they go after those NFL busts, or they go after some of the higher-profile names that might not be as good as some of the other players coming into the league, but they have a name and a reputation that the East teams use to get fan support.
Nick Lewis joining us here, moving the chains on the Rough Rider Game Day Show, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat. All of our guests coming to you live on the Mr. Lube hotline. Get fast, warranty-approved, top-to-bottom maintenance at any of the 3 Mr. Lube Regina locations. Okay, Nick, the Riders haven't confirmed it, but it looks like Zach Collaros will not play. In fact, we're told by some people he won't even dress for this game. I know you've been working with Brandon Bridge all season, and I know you've had a couple of extra study sessions with him this week. He wanted to get your help. So what's his mindset going into this football game?
Oh, it's good. You know, he's very confident in what he can do. The biggest message is go out and have fun, enjoy the moment. We always want to be in these opportunities. We always want these opportunities. And when you're going through things through the season, you know, you have to refocus. And I always told him, you never know when it's going to be your time. And now it's his time. And he's got a big moment and a great opportunity to prove that he can still go out and win football games.
You know, he made some plays last year. He got this team within 5 yards of going to a Grey Cup last year. And this year it's gone off the rails for this guy. Like, he can't throw a swing pass out into the flats. It's over the guy's head, or he drills it at Cameron Marshall. I'm talking about 2 weeks ago. Why is that, in your opinion?
I just think it's accumulation of a lot of things. You know, if your coach doesn't have a lot of trust in you, and then you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself to go out and perform to try to make other people happy or to try to make other people get some, you know, something in you that it's not worth it. Go have fun. You know, the biggest thing is you're already a professional athlete. What's going to happen is going to happen. Just go have fun and be great.
Nick Lewis joining us here, moving the chains on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. So, what does he have to do to be successful today? What did you tell him? What are you seeing on film that he has to do a better job of? Or how can he attack this Winnipeg defense?
You know, we really broke down on, he's got three keys on every play where he should know pretty much what to look for in the defense. That's one. Two, know when to use your legs and know that a punt's not a bad thing, right? You really feel good about your defense. Defense has played really well against Winnipeg all year. So as long as you're not turning the ball over and giving them any momentum, your defense is going to be the catalyst. And then you just go out, keep the offense on the field, keep drives going. But I told him he's probably going to need 50 yards rushing or more on the ground in order to get this win.
Yeah, for sure. I see it that way, too. When you're looking at his performance, it just seems this year, and we're talking about confidence, it just seems this year that, or do you see it differently? I feel like he panics a lot faster than he did last year.
It's a big difference. You know, when you have a guy like Jarius Jackson as your quarterback coach and your pass game coordinator, he's setting up things. He's putting in an offense that really fits more towards your style, and you're doing things that really helps you out compared to what you have now, and you're going to run an offense that you can still be successful in, but it doesn't always just fit your style. And Mac's going to have to open up today. He's going to have to open up the playbook. He's got to let Bridge either fly or sink, right? You can't go out and be conservative in a playoff game and hope to win.
Will we see Drew Tate today in any meaningful snaps?
I don't think so. I think if you do, it's going to be a terrible situation for the Riders, not because of Drew Tate, because, you know, coming off of not even playing football, being retired, the mindset's changed. Now to being the number three guy, that means David Watford's gotten hurt and Brandon Bridge has gotten hurt. And I think that's the only way that you would ever see Drew Tate in the game.
All right, so Nick Lewis, to wrap up, how do the Riders win this game, and do they win this game?
I believe the Riders do win, and I think it's going to be they're going to have to control the ball, and the defense is going to have to make plays. And when you look at guys like Willie Jefferson, Charleston Hughes, Ed Gainey, all those guys are veterans. They know, okay, we don't have our starting quarterback. This has got to be on us. We might have to score a touchdown to win, but we're going to make the plays to win the game. And I think with that mindset, they really go in and they really focus on doing things the right way the whole game. And, and I think Sask will pull out the win.
Nick, thanks for this. We appreciate it. And next week we'll talk more about your football academy as that continues to develop, and you want to help the next level athletes get to that next level and maybe see them down the road playing right here on Mosaic Stadium on a frozen field on a semifinal Sunday. Thanks for this, Nick. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great one.
All right. When we come back, we'll get some closing thoughts from Chris Best and Paul Waldo and send it upstairs to Rod Peterson as we're on the home stretch here of Rough Rider Game Day, brought to you by KFC and Waxy's Bobcat on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders Radio Network. Welcome back to Harvard's 620 studio here in Mosaic Stadium with Chris Best and Paul Waldo. I'm Michael Ball. The fans filing in here to our commons area, warming up, getting set for the Riders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Hopefully, the second half of semifinal Sunday is a heck of a lot better than the first game, because the Tiger Cats have just made it 43-0.
Oh, this is crazy.
What a way for Wally to go out.
Oh, yeah. There's still time, too. They can hit a 50-burger on him.
Yeah, it's still 1:05 to go in the third quarter. If we see that score today, hopefully that means the Riders have ran back two kick returns, yeah, and a couple of interceptions. Okay, let's talk about some of the guys in today's football game. Matt Nichols comes into this game with a 5-game winning streak as a starter with wins over both first place teams. Mm-hmm. Winnipeg's projected starters and kickers have 68 career playoff games. The Riders have 72, so they've got a slight edge there. Darvin Adams comes into this game with a three-game touchdown streak and 15 catches for 270 yards, his best three-game run of 2018. I don't think Darvin Adams gets enough credit, Paul Waldo, as one of the upper echelon receivers in this league.
You know what? I think he's probably the most underrated receiver. And old people, I think he was recognized as an all-star, but you know, nobody wants to put him in the top three, top four category. And I think it's the same because he's one of the biggest playmakers in the league.
For sure. And when we speak of playmakers, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Ed Gainey wasn't real thrilled with his season at the start. He had zero interceptions in the first nine games, but finished strong with three in the second half of the season, earning an all-star nod. Ed Gainey is usually matched up against the best receiver.
Oh, yeah, he definitely came on strong the second half of the season here. We definitely, you may never know what DBs, if stats actually tell the whole story, but you really feel like he made much more of an impact. Not that he was playing bad before, but he definitely returned to that playmaker status as the season went on, and we're going to need him tonight.
Brett Lowther finished at 90% on field goals. He missed only three times in the first 14 games, had three misses in the last four games, which is kind of troublesome, but he got ripped off. He is the special teams nominee in the West, not Ty Long.
Yeah, you know, I don't exactly know. I think the votings are what the media best. Is that how that works? So, yeah, you know, it's crazy because to me it's undoubtedly he should have been the nominee for the West.
Like, who cares if the guy punts?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Who cares?
I mean, it doesn't. It's whatever.
Yeah, who cares is right. Okay, so when we look at, and let's pause here for a second for special teams. Justin Medlock is a weapon.
He's an X factor, I think. Anytime you have a kicker who's pretty good from 50 and under, and he's essentially automatic. He's almost he's robotic in a sense, and that's a big weapon, especially in close games. You know, he's I think is going to be an X factor.
We talk about catching the ball, kicking that ball. Chris Best has got to be just as hard, if not harder.
Oh yeah, that's got to hurt. Luckily, Lowther's a Canadian kid. He's done it before, but like, I can't imagine how little fun that's got to be for kickoffs and for long field goals, just booting the crap out of that ball.
Remember, well, you guys are too young, which makes me sad, but. Rich Carlos of the Broncos, Tony Franklin of the Patriots, they used to kick with no shoes. They kick with bare feet.
Come on. Ow,
they used to kick with bare feet.
Are you serious?
YouTube that. Yeah, unreal. I can't believe they used to do that. wow. Speaking of special teams, I know you'll appreciate this, Paul Waldo. Not that you won't, Chris, but Paul played special teams, made a living on it. Chandler Fenner wound up number two in special teams tackles with 24. He had eight in his final three games for the Bombers. And, of course, we know Alexander Gagne. Ended the season with 23 special teams tackles and had a run with at least one in 11 straight games. It's those kind of guys, those kind of under-the-radar guys that are going to make a difference in this game today.
Absolutely. They're the guys that don't get a lot of credit, and they're the grinders. But, I mean, special teams, it changes the whole game is about field position, especially when it starts to get colder out. And, and it's gonna be imperative that those guys continue to play at high performances if their team wants a chance to win.
Jordan Reeves, those kind of things. I wonder, too, at times. I wondered this, guys. And I wasn't at all the practice, not at the close zone, obviously. If you're having trouble throwing the ball, run Nick Marshall. Put Nick Marshall in it. Like, you're the guys that say, hey, let's throw it all against the wall, all the chips on the table. Nick Marshall runs probably the best short yardage offense that we've seen this year.
They probably have a pass in him, honestly, like some sort of pass on a short yardage situation, just as a changeup. So you never know. They might see him throw.
You know,
hopefully not a lot, but we maybe see him throw once.
You know, you talk about the nasty D tackles, okay? Yep. And we talked about Corey Poop Johnson here with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. But Zach Evans leads all CFL players with four opponent fumble recoveries.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, Zach's having a heck of a year. There's no doubt. He's a force in there. Like, he is better. Like, he's a Canadian, so that helps us as well. But he's also, like, really, really good as any detail. Like, as good as any tackle in the league, really. He's come a long way.
We're running behind here, so let's hit the two-minute drill.
Yep.
Mm. Gonna be tough.
Well, as the guy running the show, I got caught with time count violation, so we're under 2 minutes. Quickly, Waldo, who wins and why?
Oh, it's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be a close one, but, you know, I got to go with the good guys. I'm going to go with the green guys by three. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be back and forth, but three's my spread. We're at home. It's going to be cold out there, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of big plays, so that's what I'm picking.
We need a defensive score. We need a big play on specials. Luckily, we have the defense and special teams that can do those things for us. I think Paul's right. About 3 points, 17-14 I'm feeling, and we're going to one for the good guys here.
I hope you're right. I want you to be right, but I picked the Bombers before the playoffs to win the Grey Cup. I did. So I think this is going to be a close game for about two quarters. And then the Bombers pull away to like a 14-point win.
I think you're lucky that Bestie's a big guy. He's going to have to escort you out to your
vehicle. I want the Riders to win. I literally will go to the bathroom and throw
you
up.
Will.
I hate that.
No, and I get it. It's going to be a good game, especially when you have your starting quarterback that's not playing. It's going
to
be close.
Thanks to Paul and Chris for joining us. We're going to head upstairs to Rod and Luke now. We'll talk to you after the ball game.